From Altoona to Bloomsburg, Erie to Grantham, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, while most of the 2023-24 state budget has been passed, over $1 billion in spending remains caught in legislative limbo as the battle over a program to help students in Pennsylvania's most underperforming schools remains a sticking point. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is here to lead a Capital Watch roundtable discussion. And as rampant crime, drug use, and homelessness mount, Philadelphia and Pittsburgh are no longer Pennsylvania's shining cities on a hill. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capital Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first we have news headlines from patownhall.com. Candidates are beginning to line up for 2024 congressional races in Pennsylvania. Republican State Representative Rob Mercury of Allegheny County announced this week that he will challenge progressive Democrat Chris DeLuzio, who is currently serving his first term in office. Reverend Jim Nielsen of McKeesport has also announced his candidacy for the Republican nomination. The 17th District, which comprises part of Allegheny and all of Beaver County, is considered to be the only competitive district in western Pennsylvania. As such, the district will be key to determining which party controls the U.S. House of Representatives in the next session. The Center Square reports that the University of Pittsburgh and Penn State University charge among the highest in-state tuition rates in the nation, this despite massive state subsidies. The University of Pittsburgh charges the second highest in-state tuition rate in the country, while Penn State charges the eighth highest rate. Financial struggles have afflicted many Pennsylvania state-related and state system universities following years of overbuilding and exploding administrative costs. The cost of labor union contracts negotiated behind closed doors by the administration of Governor Josh Shapiro has been calculated at $3.2 billion. This according to an analysis by the state's independent fiscal office. The recently ratified AFSCME contract contains significant pay increases, in some case, as much as 20% over the next 3 years. That contract is expected to set the stage for negotiations with the state's other public employee unions. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Over $1 billion in proposed state spending hangs in the balance as the battle between Senate Republicans and House Democrats over a plan to help students in the state's most underperforming public schools continues. For a look at what spending is involved, we turn to our Capital Watch crew. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Stephen Bloom of the Commonwealth Foundation and Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. David?
And welcome once again to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, your Capital Watch All-Stars. From the Commonwealth Foundation, Vice President Steve Bloom. Steve, great to see you.
Thank you, David. Great to see you as well.
Outstanding. And the other member of our team wouldn't be the same without you, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association, Rebecca Euler.
So
Rebecca?
Happy to be here again.
Great
Dave.
To be
Thank
with you.
You.
So we're here, you know, your favorite spectators on the scene in Sin City, Harrisburg, PA. And the summer is moving along. And yet, Steve, it still feels like we're kind of stuck in place.
We are a bit stuck in place for one important reason, and that is that the state budget, which was supposed to have been done by June 30th,
yes,
is still not done.
Yes.
And believe it or not, there's even fights and arguments in Harrisburg over whether, in fact, the budget is done or not.
So it's Schrodinger's budget.
But Schrodinger's budget. But clearly this budget is not done. It lacks the fiscal code, which is the part of the budget that actually directs how and when and where and how much spending will occur. All the mechanics of implementing the budget that is usually laid out in the general appropriations bill.
Right.
The general appropriations bill did pass. Granted, that's important. It helps to get some of the recurring funding out to school districts and county services and all those things that entities that rely on a regular distribution of dollars from state coffers, which is Pennsylvania taxpayer money. So that's important. But there's a $1.1 billion plus glaring omission in what's been done so far. The new spending, the spending that the governor and the Senate and the House had agreed to and voted for, the governor signed.
He kind of signed it.
He signed the general appropriations bill, didn't sign the actual fiscal code. And the fiscal code is the thing that actually makes the stuff happen.
Yeah.
And so nothing will happen. Nothing can happen legally. We are frozen still for this $1.1 billion of taxpayer money that's sitting there. And it's got to be resolved.
Yeah.
That's what we're going to be looking at as the summer winds down. I mean, we're getting close to, I guess we're past the halfway point of August already. Budget was due June 30th. We're drifting into the fall. The Senate will come back at some point in time, I think, and pass a new fiscal code bill to send to the House. But will the House come back? They're not scheduled to be coming back until September 26th.
Right. And so there are two things to clarify here to bring this issue into focus. Number one, that the budget that was negotiated between Governor Shapiro and the Senate majority, that he, you know, it went to the House. The House Democrats balked and said, no, we will not approve this budget because it had that lifeline scholarship to help kids trapped in the lowest 15% performing schools in the Commonwealth. And so Governor Shapiro said, you know, I'll split the baby and I will you guys pass it and then I'll veto line item veto this part that you don't want. Well, you know, that's not how negotiations are supposed to work because the Senate Republicans had made all kinds of concessions to get that scholarship program. And so these disputed funds are all in limbo because I guess the governor didn't realize that, yeah, you've got to have this these codes bills in it to be able to actually spend the money that was appropriated.
And it's still mind-boggling because I've talked to people even just today who have worked in the past with Governor Shapiro in his previous capacity as Attorney General, who knew him well when he was in the legislature. And everyone has said that Governor Shapiro or even before he was governor, Josh Shapiro, didn't make many mistakes politically.
Yeah.
That he was a shrewd operator, that he was very capable and competent about the things that he wanted to accomplish. Now, granted, there may be many things we don't agree with in terms of what he was trying to accomplish.
Yeah.
But the word on the street is essentially that Governor Shapiro was pretty good at getting stuff done if he wanted it done. He actually promoted and talked about and encouraged folks to understand the Lifeline Scholarship Program. And he talked about supporting it on the radio, in multiple interviews.
National TV.
National TV right before the budget was concluded. All the things that you would think would indicate that he was certainly going to make sure it was part of the budget package he negotiated, when in fact he was negotiating with the Senate all contingent on this being in there.
The other reason why we won't see action for months is because the House at this moment in time, it's a 203-seat chamber and it is deadlocked 101 Democrats to 101 Republicans. The Democrats are in charge because they used to have 102 and there's been no vote to reorganize. The Democrats, it seems, are unwilling to come back at 101-101. And so they're going to be waiting the results of a special election of the one member who departed, and that district is a heavily Democratic district in Allegheny County. And so we're going to wait for the outcome of that special election. So essentially that the House is just out of action until that result comes in.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Deadlocked at 101-101. There doesn't seem to be any impetus to come back under that scenario. So we'll have to wait till that special election is completed, which is September.
It's like mid-September, and then it takes 2 weeks to certify the election.
2 weeks to certify,
and so,
yeah.
Like, we won't be back in action until October.
Probably
the
beginning of
September.
Beginning
of October, right. So all of this is likely to stay in limbo until beginning of October.
So that's where things stand at this hour.
Perhaps one of the most unbelievable features of this to me is that many of the Democratic representatives in the House apparently didn't even know that they needed to have a fiscal code. They've been out celebrating the things they thought they quote unquote got in the budget deal. They've been touring the state bragging about these things that now they've found out, some of them just in the last week. This, and I'm talking about like newspaper articles from reputable sources quoting by name Democratic representatives who said that the leader hadn't told us that we need a fiscal code. And so members in the Democratic caucus are embarrassed.
Yes.
And now discovering that what they thought was a done deal.
Yes.
And they thought they could celebrate. In fact, they're in limbo. And as you said, they can't come back probably until October, which is just going to put a ton of pressure on them for not coming in to legislate when that's their job for months on end while they've left this big gaping hole in Pennsylvania's budget, this $1.1 billion gap and kids' futures hanging in the balance.
Yeah, so you had the budget proposal that Governor Shapiro put forward back in the spring. And then you had the House Democrats put forward a budget that increased spending $1 billion plus beyond what the governor had proposed. And then you had the budget that the Senate Republicans agreed to. And so now we've got the budget in place. And so, again, the Senate R's approved a budget that was less than what the governor had proposed. And now with the spending in limbo, the spending is actually less than that. So, I mean, if nothing else, at least for the moment, that we haven't bloated the state spending baseline more than we should have.
Right. Well, the other thing to note, though, too, is while this is all in limbo, nothing else is happening in the Capitol either. Of course, there's other legislation that typically moves, you know, in the fall, and nothing else is going to happen until this gets moving again. So,
because there's a lot of preparatory work.
Sure.
Things don't just happen, you know, at one step. That there's, you know, that there's supposed to be committee hearings and that kind of drafting, and that things take time to move through the process. That if we can't do any of that until the House comes back in October, that's going to be a pretty long wait, and it's going to be a lot of pressure on the session days that remain in this calendar year.
Right. I know there's a lot of legislation folks are hoping to get passed. You know, there's some things that we're watching, and it's just not happening. It's not going to – it's like you said, that there's going to be a crush of time between when they come back and the holiday season with few session days. So it is going to – you know, it has a snowball effect, I think.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Steve Bloom from Commonwealth Foundation and Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. So what are the politicians going to do if, you know, if there's no session until October?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, I think it's important to emphasize that at every turn in this budget fight, the Pennsylvania State Senate has been on the ball and making sure things are moving. So they've done what they need to do when they need to do it, and they will be coming in, I believe, perhaps the last week of August to wrap up getting a fiscal code over to the House.
Mm-hmm.
But the big question is then going to be the Democratic-controlled House.
Right.
That is currently literally dysfunctional. It's not happening.
Right.
It's not doing anything. It's not meeting. It's
right.
Sitting there waiting for late September or early October when they expect to win an election and gain back this 102-101 majority. Meanwhile, they're going to do nothing.
Yeah.
That's incredible. I mean, that even for, you know, legislatures have a bad track record in general.
Mm-hmm.
The Pennsylvania legislature is particularly bloated and often very slow and cumbersome and expensive, second most expensive to run in the country, second largest in the country, and just a long track record of sort of embarrassing activities. Well, this is another record breaker for embarrassment, this with the House chamber essentially frozen out and refusing to come back until they have a majority. Something that we haven't seen before.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's happened in living memory. I know so far the number of bills passed and signed into law is the lowest of any governor's term since in the last 50 years.
Wow.
So things just aren't happening, which sometimes that can be good in Harrisburg when bills aren't moving.
Yes.
But there are things that need to be done just to keep up with the pace of life and the growth of the economy and helping Pennsylvania to thrive. There are important policies we do need to address.
Right, right.
And when a legislative body is just sitting there waiting for its own basically for reasons that are completely selfish to it, they don't want to let Republicans get anything done through the House. So the Democrats are going to just shut it down until they get a majority back.
Yeah. State Representative Sarah Inamorato, who is the Democrat nominee for Allegheny County Executive, and that she resigned her seat. So that's the open seat. You know, the Democrats have every expectation that they're going to win that when the special election is held. But yeah, this does seem to be an exceptionally cynical kind of undertaking.
Keep in mind that she did not have to resign when she did. She is running for county executive. She hasn't been elected yet.
Uh-huh.
She can't serve both as county executive and a member of the House.
Mm-hmm.
But she was allowed to run and continue to be a member of the House while running. And it was, rumor has it, from pressure from inside the Democratic caucus to get her to resign early so that there wouldn't later be two vacancies when there's another Democrat who's on the ballot, I think, for a judgeship, likely to win that in the
mm-hmm,
fall.
Mm-hmm.
And if they were – the Democrat leadership was said to be afraid that they would be down by two votes.
Right, and then a reorganization would take place.
In a very dangerous place in terms of who would actually control the chamber. So they kind of pushed her to get out and resign early.
Yeah.
But at for their own benefit, but to the detriment of the citizens of Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's the – you know – I mean, as the old saying goes, politics ain't beanbag. You know that these things are hard fought and hard won. But it is just dispiriting to see the public's business and the general like public good not to be considered at all in the context of this particular situation.
The cold political calculations completely rule the day.
Yeah, yeah, it is so. But anyway, this is where we are. Of course, you know, if and when the House comes back and is functional again, they'll have to, as you said, Steve, take up the codes bill passed by the Senate. And of course, you know, I mean, I guess what are they going to do? Negotiate with Governor Shapiro again as to what's what and as to what the House Democrats are willing to approve when they get back.
And that's, right, and we can only hope. And I feel like the governor has been sending out at least some signaling that he is still supportive of Lifeline scholarships,
uh-huh.
which is encouraging to hear. He actually is – when he talks about Lifeline scholarships, he actually does an excellent job explaining what they are and how they work and how they help these kids trapped in the bottom 15% performing school districts. So he gets it. He understands it. He's able to articulate it. And my hope is that he'll see that the way things unfolded – during July, when the budget should have been wrapping up, was not ideal, and it can still be corrected. And it's the kind of thing that, well, it didn't happen when it ought to have happened, but it still can happen. And I'm confident that we still have a strong opportunity here for Pennsylvania to get not only a finished budget,
mm-hmm.
but a budget that includes Lifeline scholarships.
You know, because it's – the listeners have heard me say this before, and I, you know, I hate to repeat myself, but some of these points actually bear repeating, that our young people are living out their lives in real time, and that for these youngsters, these are the years when they are supposed to be learning at the appropriate grade level. Once that grade year is gone, it's gone. And if the kid didn't learn what the kid was supposed to learn, then that kid is behind permanently, and it has to be remediated down the road if it ever is remediated at all.
Well, if there was any proof of that, it would have been the COVID lockdown, because we're still seeing the impact of what that did to kids who you know, were home for a year or 2 years and did not learn during that period. So that's an absolute proof of the impact of losing a year or two of school. And it takes a lifetime to recover from that sometimes. So I know schools are very focused on trying to make that up now, but you're absolutely right. You can't make up for that time.
And so easily. for these kids who are stuck in the worst performing schools in Pennsylvania, bottom 15% of the schools in the Commonwealth, they need a way out. They need a way out now. It's not good enough that some thinker is going to say, hey, you know, here's a plan to fix the schools in 5 years' time. It's like, no, even if that was true, and it's never been. I mean, people have proposed plans forever. But even if it were true, like, that kid doesn't have 5 years. That kid doesn't have 1 year to waste. None of our kids do.
Well, because many of those kids are dealing with the impacts that they had from the COVID lockdown on top of the schools that they're in.
Correct.
So it's an even worse time for this to be happening right
now.
And
again, just one would wish that – you know, there are so few things that folks today can all agree on. But I would hope that it would be common ground to say that education is the great equalizer. that no matter where you're starting off in life, if you have a high quality education that helps you to, you know, to read and to write and to understand the sciences and to solve problems and to think independently and to understand history and literature and all these things, that you can become a successful person in life. And that that's the whole purpose of public education, that the public generally be educated. And you know, to have – and it's kind of like with the legislative shutdown thing, that – you know, yes, we know that people are you know, concerned about employment and money and all that stuff. But it's like the fact that those priorities are more important, like to the exclusion of the well-being of the students, whether or not those students are learning, whether or not those students are going to be like permanently stunted because they were denied a meaningful and rigorous educational experience at the time when they were supposed to get it. Again, it's just cold-bloodedly cynical in a way that I'm not comfortable with.
And we're talking about 250,000 kids that would have been eligible for Lifeline scholarships. Now, not every one of those kids would have utilized it and applied for the program and made a change and went to a different school, but many of them would have. And they've lost a year now. It's too late for this school year. So they're back in these schools this year. They'll be back in school just in a matter of weeks. In schools, 40 of which have zero kids proficient in either math or reading.
It's a human rights violation.
Can you believe that?
Like,
can you imagine a school?
It's
a school.
In.
The point of a school is to educate, and there's schools that are actually producing the thing they're producing is supposed to be educated kids. 0% of these kids are proficient.
And it's just, again, I would hope that this will be the common ground that this is not acceptable for any of us. And as you said, the Governor Shapiro has spoken to this issue. He's explained it clearly and well. He has said that he supports it. And here's hoping that he finds a way to convince the House Democrats to allow this to become law. So anyway, we're down to the last of our time. I'm sorry that we have to go. It always burns up so fast. Steve, where can people go to learn more about you and what you do?
They can visit CommonwealthFoundation.org on the web.
Outstanding. Rebecca, where can people go to learn more about you and what you do?
You can find the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association at PMTA.org.
Wonderful. And as ever, you can find me online at PAManufacturers.org. And from Steve and Rebecca and me, thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. Progressive policies have laid waste to Pennsylvania's two largest cities as crime, rampant drug use, and homelessness have consumed both Pittsburgh and Philadelphia. Pittsburgh is running full speed into the abyss as progressives gain more political power, and Philadelphia suffers from a George Soros-backed district attorney's soft-on-crime approach that has enabled the lawlessness. In recent days, the spotlight has been placed on Philadelphia and Pittsburgh by Fox News and the Washington Examiner. What the spotlight revealed was truly disturbing. The Fox News report focused on Philadelphia's Kensington neighborhood, which has degenerated into an open-air drug market. The details are graphic. Quote, "In Kensington's open-air drug market, users were passed out on the pavement, covered in scabbing or oozing flesh wounds from xylene, with fresh blood running down their arms from injecting themselves with needles. Some users were spotted wandering around in a stupor through a busy road," end quote. The neighborhood is emblematic of a larger crime problem plaguing the city. Violent crime has spiked with over 500 homicides last year. Broad and Liberty reports that property crimes are also on the rise. Quote, "Retail theft jumped up 52%, going from 9,371 reported incidents in 2021 to 14,533 incidents in 2022. It's an all-time high for that subcategory, going back to 2015, according to an analysis of 8 years of annual data published by the Philadelphia Police Departments. Auto thefts increased 36%, from 2021 to 2022, end quote. Philadelphia District Attorney Larry Krasner is one of several George Soros-backed DAs around the country whose progressive policies have decimated the cities they are sworn to defend. Krasner was impeached by the Pennsylvania House of Representatives during the last session of the General Assembly, but never stood trial in the state Senate. Meanwhile, at the other end of Penn's Woods, the city of Pittsburgh has its own problems with crime and urban decay. Writing in the Washington Examiner, Selena Zito described the downtown scene, quote, "A drive throughout the city in mid-morning, mid-afternoon, and in the evening found a city in decay. Homelessness isn't hidden. It is prevalent. Patches of open-air drug markets are brazenly conducted. The smell of urine and feces is prevalent, and reports of small businesses calling it quits grow in frequency. Some days, the Pittsburgh Renewal truck will pull up to unload a crew to clean up the feces and needles. The crew is an effort by the Pittsburgh Downtown Partnership, a private nonprofit civic organization formed by local businesses to clean up the city's decay. In short, they are treating the symptom of a disease the city refuses to address," end quote. In her article, Zito lays blame for the situation at the feet of current Mayor Ed Gainey, who she reports, quote, "after taking office in January of 2022, has done little to nothing to address the city's collapse." Gainey is one of a growing number of progressives who have displaced traditional Democrats in public office in Pittsburgh and Allegheny County. Their ideological fervor and fealty to left-wing special interest groups prevent them from taking the practical steps needed to address the city's problems. In Pittsburgh, the situation is poised to become even worse. Traditional Democrats split to vote in the May primary for Allegheny County Executive, allowing socialist progressive Sarah Inamorato to win the nomination. In heavily Democrat Allegheny County, she is favored to win the general election. In the same primary, incumbent traditional Democrat Stephen Zappala was defeated by Soros-backed progressive Matt Dugan. Zappala secured the Republican nomination by write-in, setting up a November rematch. The bottom line is that as far as Philadelphia and Pittsburgh have fallen, the stage is set for things to get even worse, especially in the Steel City. Traditional Democrats in Allegheny County seem to have no answer to the rise of the party's socialist progressive wing, which is poised to control all the levers of power, thus further implementing the policies that have driven the decay. A region rots from the city core outward. Recent statistics show a significant jump in the crime rate in Delaware County, which borders on Philadelphia. Suburbanites need to turn a wary eye to what is happening in the state's largest cities. Neither city is likely to abandon its progressive path. That means the problems will only spread and get worse. Much worse. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 28 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WJUN-AM in Mexico, WJSM-FM in Martinsburg, along with WQZS-FM in Myersdale, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the cost of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.
Thank you.